Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Dale. You found us, Masonic Effects. Where have you been? We're creeping up onto the Ides of March, ladies and gentlemen. Unbelievable. The life goes in spite of all the media attention to everything that could possibly be stressful and corrupting, you know, the awfulness of the world around us. Somehow good people seem to be managing quite well. I wish, you know, there was a way just to dilute all of the politics, but in our world, you know, and the collisions of the politics, you know. Of course they're always going to be chasing us around with these wonderful, wonderful explanations, justifications for themselves, truly, their value and purpose. Most of them haven't quite evolved to the level of being able to articulate their own justification without it being conflict-based. And I don't agree that conflict and tension is the set point for people. I don't agree that tribes were designed just to do battle with each other. I don't agree with that. I find that there were so many, especially where I am, there were so many peace-abiding people and around the world. It's not just limited to here where people couldn't relate. People from battle-hardened cultures didn't know quite what to do with this utopia, this paradise. Deep, deep forest full of wildlife and rivers so pure that you sat down and listened. You could hear the life all around you, and then to find it was inhabited by a people who had this sense of the divine in nature, the spirit. There was spirit in everything, in animal and plant, in the trees, in the rivers, the stars. These, of course, they had to be murdered. They had to be exploited. Of course they did, because that was all that's how pathetic the intruders, that's the baggage that the intruders brought, the greed, you know. You would get a pat on the back, a little tap on the head for perpetrating whatever crime was necessary, with some made up declaration that, you know, because you're part of that group and that, you know, anything that you touch falls under their authority. Well, you know how absurd that is. It was absurd then. Not everybody in these remote communities living in harmony, literally, because you needed to. You needed to be dependent on each other. Fit with that strutting arrogance and imperiousness. And no, I'm not. I'm over the days where the imperial might is going to be my battle cry. No, I don't need that. I'm over, well over, the thought that I'm a colonial, you know, artifact. No, not. But when you think about the perspective, the story didn't change. The consequences are known, and there is accountability, as there always is. Whether it's and where we find the justice, whether there's justice to it all, I think is a matter of the change in perspective that happens over time. You know, those efforts to dominate, we read about them in history. You know, how many centuries were Spain and Portugal at war? And when you look at it through the distance of this time, what does it matter? What was the point? The 100 years war here and battle over there. What's the point? You know, and the saber rattling. Oh well, we'll go and destroy everything. That's all you've got on your mind, and you're claiming that that's the dominant force in the planet today. That's power. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. Oh, well, the U.S. they can come and burn my house down. Yeah. Well, then that's what you call power. Pathetic. Just pathetic. And after they murder the likes of me, what then? I've lived a meaningful existence. They do what they do. They're going to be met with, you know, there's physics out there. Somebody will pick up they'll pick up a stick and try and hit me, and I'll pick up a bigger stick and try and hit them. And then what? Like, then what is the common sense of people like us that sit down and talk and sort out our difficulties? Where you know full well that we're going to have to deal with our own zealots, and they're going to have to deal with their own zealots. And if we put the zealots in the room together, if we could put them, take them to Alba and just exile them all. There you go. And we're going to give you we're going to give you dinner spoons. Have at it. Go at it. Battle it out with dinner spoons. And in the end, you know, whatever's left, stay there. You know, great. Stay there. And good riddance. And to think that, once some people were beginning to believe that's the way it is, you know, just have to pick up arms and carry on with the destruction of either people like us or our environment. Once we believed that, we started to redefine ourselves. More of that, what do the kids call it, sheeples? You know, follow around. Don't think. Follow. A fickle leader into an emptiness. Be manipulated. If you, that's your nature, be manipulated. I think the listeners to Masonic Effects, yes, all you listeners like you folks in South Africa and Brazil and the Philippines and Japan and Greece and Britain, oh my goodness, and North America, for sure. I think we're beyond it. Truly, I think we're beyond all of it. We're beyond that. We can't stop them from carrying on and braying and saying what they what silliness they need to express. But it doesn't change us. We are what we are too. We know better. And we'll find the right path. We'll find the joy. We don't have to pretend. We don't have to pretend them out of existence. We can when we think about what the anecdote is, if there's an anecdote, what is it? It's probably what you're doing right now. It's being a decent human being. Looking at the world and shake your head. Yeah, that's absolutely necessary. But we're being with people who rightfully they'll be discouraged. My goodness, who wouldn't be when you think, is it so unreasonable for people to feel discouraged? I cannot imagine being a young person coming into the world and looking at other generations, looking at the mess and realizing this ideal of the natural state being destroyed by this generation, this hippie generation that grew up all peace and love and destroyed just about everything they could get in the production of an unsustainable lifestyle. Oh my Lord. Oh my Lord, what do they do? Do they hate their grandparents and great grandparents for it? Who's to blame? There's the corporations, the faceless, global corporations. Oh my goodness, that's a conspiracy theory. That's conspiracy. Or the mocking. What do the old boys mock around here? A woke culture. Well, we're aware of all of these minority voices that were ignored. And abused for throughout history, and now we didn't give them voice. They had voice, and they're exercising it. We didn't allow them access. They fought for it. They described their right. And they still are. And of course, they're joining the chorus. And if that's a little bit too overwhelming for the, the old relics of imperialism, well, that's too damn bad. Too damn bad. I have no sympathy for that. It was a wise old man, my grandfather, who said what was teaching me these silly Masonic values when I was just a boy, who reminded me that they don't really amount to much, really don't. The decent men didn't need police and lawyers. You know, those people came to the community, bad things and division and conflict would always occur. And I did realize that the world that he described, yes, it had bearing. And do I live? I don't live at the muzzle, with the muzzle of a gun pointed at me like the people tolerate south of us. I do look for it and expect the decency. I expect people to come over and test the culture and try and prove that it's all a big joke. It's like this. Have you not heard? You've heard people walking around a university or listening to, you know, have some young graduates so proud of their accomplishment. They work so hard. You know what that's like. The long hours and the thankless tasks and the tedious textbooks. You know, you just try to absorb this material. And then the relevant, you know, the context will come apparent later on when you're an old dude. But that pride, that satisfaction, and then for some stiff to be mocking them. Oh, higher education is meaningless. You know, it's just a waste of time. It's for them. It's all entitlement. Pshaw, pshaw, pshaw. Little men saying, with feeble ideas, saying things that ought not to be said out loud because it makes them sound very foolish. My goodness. But is saying this or thinking this going to stop it? Nah. There are so many folks that don't have the self-belief. And I've met so many beautiful folks, and that seemed to be all that they had was self-belief, because that was needed for them to go on day by day. It was a belief that things would get better. And to see the dignity in a life of degradation, to actually see people living that way, it shook my meager little values to the core. So yeah, I wish, you know, sometimes I say to myself, I wish I wanted to, I could just fall in line, and I wish I could just accept the price of the marketplace. Just, you know, change my thoughts so I can just be mainstream. I'll adapt so that my thinking is correct. Sometimes I wish that it would be easier, but then I would hate myself. I would be pretty useless. I don't know. I don't think any of you would be tuning me in right now. We have opportunity. My goodness, always we have opportunity, but the fates don't care. That's the odd thing. I might be tasting everything that I ever ate on Facebook. Doesn't matter. What in the world is going on? They make me, or anyone think that what I'm doing with my dog is of any interest to you. Honestly. But look around. I'm thinking, what's gonna happen next? Because the little kids coming around, one of the threats to the stupidity of age is the honesty of little kids. They look at the world the way it is. And the way it is, man, it's weird, eh? And what's the one thing that they do? Some cultures, you know, the kids will be taught, you know, the values and mores to carry on the culture. There's a singular kind of pride. But they're also rendering their own decisions. They're also looking around at what works and what doesn't work. We've seen that happen in conflict zones. where the next generations aren't buying it. They see the destruction. They look at it from different perspective. Some young boys will pick up guns and go at it the same as their ancestors, and they'll feel they'll rationalize it that way. You know, grandpa did it this way, so to be loyal to him, blah, blah, blah. But fortunately, time really brings along with it the truth, and it never never goes away. I don't have much sense of that anymore. I'm not a good person to be telling anybody the difference between right and wrong. I've just, you know, seen too much, maybe. But I can tell you that there is a decency that's just amazing. And what's needed? You want to know the anecdote? In my humble opinion, what's needed in the world and all of this? Oh, you hate me for this, but what's needed is you. You just being you. And I don't, when I think about all of the people listening and tuning into these shows, I don't think of you as some kind of, you know, benign monster. I do not. I do not think of you as some relic. I think of you as a person of sensation, of experience, of desire. I think of you as a people of conscience, and I don't think that's projection. I think that's description. I think that's what I hope that's what you find links us and has you coming back, listening to this kind of conversation, to change the world out there. You do. You're the butterfly wing affecting the tornado. You're the, we're all in the room together, monkeys with typewriters banging away until we create Hamlet. Yeah. we're that effect. Now, having that understanding and that influence, is that justification for arrogance or a sense of omnipotence? Or I hope not. I hope we're not that superficial. You know, I hope if there's, you know, I think, and I've reached a point where people, for a long time, when people would try to, you know, to manipulate me, I always felt, and I still do, you know, thank you for thinking that I'm that that stupid. I would go along with it. I'm far too cynical for this crap. But thank you for trying. You know, I'm flattered that you would think I'm that stupid. Or I go along with that kind of nonsense. It's like, are you kidding? Have you not met me? And you know exactly what I'm talking about because it's happened with you, hasn't it? Oh, well, this person is such a, and, you know, they're just so intolerable, and they're going to impose their will on the world. Never worries. When you're kids, you don't know this. You know, you don't always know this. But there comes a tipping point, where you think, my Lord, you know, this doesn't feel right. And no, that's not going to happen. And if you're threatening, carry it out or shut up. And don't come, and don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. Yeah, I know. Isn't that what we have in common? The sense of common sense and dignity. It's like, my goodness, we have better things to talk about than that. And a lovely guy was talking to me the other day, and he reminded me, you know, when you're listening to somebody just gossiping and complaining, it's like, whoa, what are you doing? You want you know, is it the gossipiness, if you tell me, is that a sort of an alignment? Is that trying to legitimize this this silliness? It's, you know, I don't mind that, I guess, anymore. It's like once, you know, you, I can remember becoming aware and think, oh my goodness, you know, this person's just been, it's like becoming aware of somebody that calls himself your friend and then treats you like dirt, you know, and says, well, buddies, we're still friends. Yeah, but my friends don't dump on me all the time. And no, you don't get to go, you know, go away. And so I'm one of those fools that has absolute delight with his own time and his own space. And how did that, I don't know. Maybe I've always had that kind of gene in me, but the satisfaction of and I frankly, the digital world, yeah, you know, I'm still trying to figure that out. I know it's been around forever, but I like the experience of and I have those memories walking through stacks in libraries with seeing the titles of books that I never imagined would be catch my eye and picking one up at random, or is that random? And then just finding myself captivated. Oh, I still have that. And I look around and I'm just, it's terrible. I don't know about you, my studies, you're always carrying a bag of books when you're in school and you're reading a different subject. There's always that pressure, and then there's that earnestness, you know, we're going to strive. We can absolutely do this. I have to stay up all night and read those chapters. Yeah, absolutely. I am going to argue with that professor at 8 o'clock in the morning. And yes, I am going to read the damn footnotes, you know, that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden I end up here with all this material around me thinking, oh, this is fantastic. I remix the chemistry every single time I sit down. And so here, what do I have? I have Goethe's Faust, and I'm looking at Living the Enlightenment, I have the Ars Quattro, the Transactions. This is last year, so volume 135. You know, idiot, what is he doing? Absolute joy. I can put on a little John Coltrane or Chopin. Right now I'm sort of fascinated with Chopin's work or Debussy's work, and I'm pretty self-sufficient. Of course, I have a wonderful partner. She's just been with me forever. Like, I'm fortunate. And I know that all of this can change. Yeah. All of this can change in a heartbeat, and I can be faced with adversity. And just like you, whenever that happens, I would do the best that I can. This show today, I think, is just stunning. In the title of this, get this, what was he thinking? The Intelligent Life of a Mason. Yes, what was he thinking? And the poetry today, it may be cringeworthy, but it's Emerson's poem, Fate. Yeah, I should have warned you, you know, or you should have known. You've tuned into the show before. I'm so chuffed, and I'm very happy to have you join us, and I look forward for, let's do this, let's try and do this with a bit of sophistication, eh? Trying to work with wireless things, you know, it's like they time out, they have a sort of a life of their own. be patient. Everything will be as it must be in its own time, I guess. What I'm doing is I'm just connecting to a big playlist here. I just need to have some remoteness. And it doesn't want to just link. That's all it is, you know. But also satisfying when it works. You know, that's that reminds me. That's Bill Evans doing Gary's theme my younger brother, lovely man. A little homage to the boy. Tremendous guy. I learned a lot from him. You ready for a commentary? Start the conversation. The intelligent life of a Mesa. If it doesn't challenge, how does it hope to hold your attention? Even the simplest task can be a chore, overwhelming for someone. If we lived in different times or felt differently about mutual commitment, things might be different. But fortunately for him, our Masonic institutions stream him and us according to ability. It is hard to refine thinking if the plausibility of improvement is not present in the fellow's mind already. So are you receptive to it? Because, you know, if you're not, we can find all kinds of mental gymnastics to avoid. You know, those themes, if we create this archetype of limitations in our mind and then we go about living it out, self-fulfilling prophecy kind of thing. Again, we are fortunate. We cultivate our interests enriched by philosophies with such compassion. The idea of experiencing the feel of that atmosphere, it comes alive. But take care casting aspersions. Other men learning what influence really is are sure to watch that like intense gravity drawing in the light. Huh? Once you understand compassion for the world around, it feels familiar, predictable, and oh, so discreet. we absorb the beauty of the craft and the things that we pick up is that they are brought into our mind. You and I have the privacy of our own thoughts to explore the merit, the value, to try and understand. But it's all too easy for people to slip. Particularly, you know, when faced with difficulty as a group where we need to be, you know, we want to be able to create something that requires a lot of minds coming together, not to create a subordination, but to create something divine, some beauty, and present that to, and not to be the judge of that ourselves. This is rhetoric. It's a rhetorical. The judge of the beauty comes in the eye of the beholder. You create what your mind sees, and then if you're bold and brave, you share that with the world. And I think of the thousands of bits of art that are started and tossed aside, or you think about the pieces that are just lovely, but for the confidence, the lack of confidence to share it with the world. Nobody would like my poem. You know, how many times that anxiety, the performance anxiety, you know, no, I'm not that great a guitarist, you know, and my voice, it cracks and, you know, cackles and carries on. But then if you think about all that, and then those opportunities when to have a song, a melody, and to have somebody perform it over, you know, I remember an opportunity, where was it? It was in a military base as a boy, you know, one of those training camps, an Air Force base. And it was a talent show, and one fellow could play the piano, and there was a piano in the gymnasium, and there was hundreds and hundreds of us there, and he said, "Oh, he's very apologetic. I think it's about the western part of Canada," and he said, "I only know one song," but he really did. We played a beautiful song, and And, you know, everybody's screaming and yelling, as young guys tend to, and you've been in training for a couple of weeks and you know what that's like, and it's hot, and here this is entertainment, and people are, you know, doing funny things, to just anything, didn't matter what, just to get a laugh. That was, you know, what the, and he played, and more, play more, and his apology. I only know one song, and that was fine. And I can't tell you, what did he play three or four times? Always do Rapture. Just the audience was fabulous. But he was, it was an eye-opener, hey? One of those memories that you take back and carry with you for a very long time. So I hope that there's artistry inside of you. And remember the works of many, many major painters and writers and poets and came when they were in considered seniors, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and older. What's limiting you? I don't mean, you know, if you're walking around looking like, what do they call that, when an old man is trying to look younger? Well, you know, if that's, you don't mind playing the fool guy, you know, you don't need permission to do that. but the creativity, that creative gene inside of you, it's still there, isn't it? I think. Anyway, there's the Intelligent Life of a Mason 101. Thank you. Huh. Just like that. Here on a rainy day. Here. Language. The poem, the poetry today is Ralph Waldo Emerson. And I like the, you know, I like the backstory about Emerson. Just to preface this, I want to talk about the importance. And let me attempt to convince you. I'm probably speaking to the converted. Language in a human's life is an essential tool to communicate. You see, I like that opening statement in this explanation because it suggests to us, it refers to us being different than the language, and our thoughts are different than the words, the language that we're taught, the words to express those thoughts. Our thoughts are something else, something that we define the best we can with through language, with words. We define that to each other and to ourselves. Oh, and then what is that, you know, what is that great void there that where before where the mind is working, but it's outside of language limitations? That's the rub, isn't it? Language in a human's life is an essential tool. Language is created by connecting different words together. And in the poetry, poet compress the different words in a beautiful manner to transfer his or her ideas or emotions to the listener or listeners, the reader. Poetry is same as language, but it is described in a different way to make the words more charming. Poetry is an important part in every human being's life. It can let us think more creatively and emotionally. Most often poets use their poetry to convey their message to the audience in a unique way to illustrate their words of poetry to the reader. Here, in the film, do you remember Dead Poets Society? Well, I'm going to, if you don't mind, indulge me here for a second. The director, Peter Weir, created an important scene where Mr. Keating, the teacher, steps up on his desk and asks the student, "Why do I stand up here? Anybody? And Charlie said, to feel better. And Keating said, "No, I stand upon my desk to remind you that we must constantly look at things in a different way." And this scene is important because Mr. Keating thinks that if we could see the world from a different angle, then individuals will be able to create something new like poetry. In today's society, I think poetic language is important because it lets the individual know the inside of their life. Poetry helps readers to understand the reality of the world because in today's world, many of the poets use their poetry to convey the reality. Poetry is like a big ocean, and when individuals read the poetry, he dives into an extremely deep into that so that he can understand the reality. After they dive into the poetry, the reader understands the reality and sees the world in a realistic way. Early in his life, in his experience as a scholar, Emerson believed firmly in the idea of self and the ability of an individual to form his or her own path. And later on in his studies, Emerson began to think more about the concept of fate and destiny. His unique essay, Fate, is quite literally a contradiction of his earlier thoughts and ideologies. He uses many distinct literary forms that help him, as well as the reader, explore his thinking. Emerson introduces the idea of power and circumstance. The topic that he is exploring is much too complicated for the audience to understand without the use of colorful paradoxes, thought-provoking metaphors, and parables that institute aspects of religion and nature. He uses paradox in a way to contradict his previous statements made in his earlier essay, Self-Reliance. He uses religious metaphors and parables to propose biblical ideas of faith and what he believes is the more relevant aspects. Emerson uses an ancient Norse parable to explain how humans are limited by an eternal law that is ultimately impassable. This example shows the Norse gods binding the Fenris wolf, an evil entity which represented the goading of a guilty conscience. They put round his foot a limp band, softer than silk or cobweb, and this held him. The more he spurned it, the stiffer it drew. So soft and staunch is the ring of fate. Oh, my, my. The tone of his writing is contemplative. It seems that Emerson writes, he is thinking about what he is saying, and all of his prior thoughts are influencing his writing process. He will propose an idea and then explain through a series of quotes from Chaucer or Herodotus why this idea is essential to the rest of his writing. He was a talented essayist because he accepted that his writing would be interpreted differently by different people reading it. And not only does he accept it, he insisted that his writing should not be taken too explicitly and that his audience should form their own idea of the concepts that his writing embodied. So this was a man from a state that no longer exists. He was from the United States. No longer exists. The river has continued on its course, and it's different, far, far different. But look at what do you think? Fate. That you are fear or wise is vain or strong or rich or generous. You must have also the untaught strain that sheds beauty on the rose. There is a melody born of melody which melts the world into a sea. Toil could never compass it. Art, its height, could never hit. It came never out of wit, but a music born. Well, may Jove and Juno scorn thy beauty, if it lack the fire which drives me mad with sweet desire. What boots it? What the soldier's mail, unless he conquer and prevail? What all the goods that pride which lift, if thou pine for another's gift? Ah, alas! That one is born of blight, victim of perpetual slight. When thou lookest on his face, thy heart saith, brother, go thy ways. No, none shall ask thee what thou dost, nor care a rush for what thou knowest, or listen when thou repletest, or remember when thou liest, or how thy supper is sodden, and another is born. To make the sun forgotten, surely he carries a talisman under his tongue. Broad are his shoulders and strong, and his eye is scornful, threatening and young. I hold it of little matter whether your jewel be of pure water, or a rose diamond, or a white, but whether it dazzle me with light, I care not how you are dressed. In the coarsest or the best, nor whether your name is base or brave, nor for the fashion of your behavior, whether you charm me. Did my bread feed and my fire warm me? And dress up nature in your favor. One thing is forever good. That one thing is success. Dear to the Eumenides and to all the heavenly brood who bides time, nor looks abroad, carries the eagles, and masters the sword. Feet, eh? Devilish stuff. Now we have a history that's going to, both the Strasbourg lodges, and we're talking about the reinstatement of a lodge. And it had been booted out because well, we'll get into it. It's not like these tendencies were very bold and pronounced in the 18th century and no longer exist. It's like they've morphed into something else. We experience it in our lodges, but we don't see it. People learn to, like politics, who learns to become subtle. But our nature is always present. Here, this, we're talking about a period in 1779. Remember, American Revolution, and then afterwards, the French Revolution. So the climate was very electrified by these events. The smugness of imperialists was being challenged. Oh, and then in the background we have the fairly new Grand Lodge of Paris that had unceremoniously expelled the Saint Genevieve, and they were being reinstated. 1779, but in 1773 they had expelled them because they had been permitting too many actors, men of low social standing, to partake in its temple. Now we have that, but my goodness, so, you know, history sort of is a cleanse. It allows us to talk about these things at a safe distance. But to think today that we're going to, you know, we've let, you know, even to think of the concept of low men of low character. Well, yeah. The world I live in has those kind of folks, and we've seen some nastiness where, you know, tragically terrible people have persuaded themselves into the doors of a lodge temporarily before they're found and punted. So this is what's happened. Too many actors. Indeed, quote, from its earliest history up to the 1770s, the lodge was composed entirely of men from the third estate. The third estate is the common people of France. And it was said to constitute a complete nation of itself. It's one of the three orders that, you know, stratified. It's the strong and robust man who has one arm still shackled. That came from, that's a quote from 1789, Sieyès. And if the privileged order should be abolished, the nation would be nothing less. In its earliest history up to the 1770s, the lodge was composed entirely of men from the third estate. Eventually, almost all merchants, along with few prosperous craftsmen, in its earlier years, artists, actors, and musicians were more commonplace. The expulsion of the lodge meant that it became, in Masonic terminology, irregular or clandestine, or worse still, in the domestic metaphor so cherished by the lodges, a bastard. The gradual upgrading of the social standing of the brothers may very well have been in response to the pressure created by the expulsion. The legality of the lodge depended upon the recognition of the Grand Lodge, of course. That was the point of the ceremony just related. It was preceded by a lengthy correspondence with the Grand Lodge assuring it that the merchants of Saint Genevieve were of the best reputation. And in secret communication, the lodge must also plead for the, quote, good life and mores, the talent of its orator, a young actor, Joseph Saint-Val. The search for legitimacy and hence respectability did not, however, mute the anger of these bourgeois brothers. the orator who could have been the very actor whose station and rank had been so bluntly questioned is almost menacing in his condemnation of pride, self-interest, and indirectly the failure to pay one's fair share of the tax burden, as well as the condition of the poor. The equality being proclaimed is among men of substance, as witnessed by the lavishness of their temple. Yet, in order to proclaim it, they must be designated simple workers. From Candu Lodge, which had its own earlier dispute going on with the Grand Lodge, the virtue embodied in the Masonic Code, as understood in Saint-Genevieve, permitted a rhetorical identification with the people. In the face of the haughtiness, first at La Candeur and then of Grand Lodge, what other identification was possible? In the very next year, the orator reminds the lodge that the Freemason does not let himself be dazzled by the display of grandeur nor by the pomp of courts. He often notices behind these imposing externalities the impertinent efforts of pride at hiding weaknesses, and even sometimes the crime of men who only occupy high ranks thanks to the accident of birth, or by intrigue, or by flattery, or perhaps by means even more infamous. By contrast, the true Freemason respects the living image of the great architect of the universe. He is at all times a faithful subject, a zealous citizen, a tender father, a loyal spouse, a sincere friend. The refusal to identify with the mores of somewhat caricatured aristocracy implies no rejection of the duties attached to the state. On other occasions, orators of the lodge gloried in the fact that there have been monarchs who have been honored by calling themselves brothers of the poorest artisans. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a wrap. We've come to the end of another show. Thank you for sitting in. I'll wait for your reactions to the conversation. It's been a pleasure having you join us here at Masonica FX. Remember, life isn't always easy. And there'll be times when unexpected things happen that test our convictions. And that's when we need each other most. That's when we need to dig a little deeper, find the compassion, believe in ourselves, and prevail and carry on. We simply carry on. To do that with a spirit of contentment or satisfaction or confidence, that takes a bit of refinement. So it's not so plastic, And I think you find that as you get a little older. I don't mean the old fella that just becomes absorbed with his own foolishness. We don't seem to allow ourselves that. We're always putting ourselves up to some kind of measure. Measure me, this is me, and yeah, come in whatever form that is, and whatever you say, whatever your assumption is, whether it's accurate in its fullness or not, the craftsman carries on. He is who he is. If you do not believe that I am an honest man, watch me. That is what I am. And be skeptical. I never expect anybody with this program to trust anything that I would ever say. Check it out for yourself. You're a grown man. You're grown up. You're an adult. Check it out for yourself. I don't have any inclination to deceive or mislead, but neither do I presume that I'm talking down to anybody. Well, certainly not. Check life. You do your own examination, as I've tried to do. And I think we'll have more to talk about, don't you? Thanks for now. I'll see you very soon. Be well. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. And my goodness, include yourself, would you? It's a pleasure. Bye. Thank you.